A sermon by Reverend Richard A. Rem, preached at Christ Community Church in Spring Lake, Michigan, on February 2, 1986, entitled, A Nation at Its Best, A Response to Gorbachev's Disarming. Copyright, Grand Valley State University.
As I said a moment ago, I have just simply had this experience of national tragedy in my mind and in my heart so much this week that finally I did yield and say to myself, that's what we're going to think about together for a few moments this morning. Can't explain rationally why that incident made such a tremendous impact. More people will die on Michigan roads this weekend, I suppose, than died in the shuttle accident. There probably would be many factors that could be offered as a reason for the deep impact of the experience. But whatever those reasons would be, it is true that we as a nation experienced something together that was tragic. We experienced our helplessness, our vulnerability, our weakness in the wake of such brilliance, such triumph, such amazing accomplishment. And the juxtaposition of those things continued to fascinate me all week as I reflected on it. On the one hand, the brilliance, the technological capacity of the human person, of American technology, of this nation that has set itself to master cosmic space, the sheer brilliance of it, the brilliance of the human mind, the capability of technology that has been put together by the human mind, the human ingenuity, and the awesome accomplishments that we as a people have experienced. America, number one in technological breakthrough, in scientific endeavor. Amazing accomplishments that we share as a people, which we affirm, which we rejoice in, which we believe reflect the fact that we have been created in the image of God and have been given the capacity to think His thoughts after Him. On the one hand, all of that brightness and all of that brilliance and the blasé way in which we tend to take that for granted. And on the other hand, the fragility of human life, the vulnerability of the human person, the weakness, so that in a moment, human life snuffed out, blown to smithereens. The juxtaposition of those contrasting impressions. The thing that I learned about my nation again this week is something that I cherish. In the wake of tragedy, America worships. What week can you remember when there were so many priests and pastors and rabbis on television offering prayers and words of reflection. I felt for them. What a time to have some word to speak, some word in due season, some word that would not be facile, some word that would not fudge and muddy the waters, some word that would not be a pious cliché, but some word that would sound the depths of what we were experiencing, some word that would put us in touch with the eternal God and eternal truth and the foundation of things. In the juxtaposition of the brightness and the darkness, the grandeur and the vulnerability of the human experience, I was struck with the fact that in the face of tragedy, America worships. Where do you turn at a time like that? Where do you turn if there is no one to whom to turn? Another stark contrast that I was very conscious of was back a year or two ago when Russia was going through the change of leadership. They lost two of their leaders in a very short space of time, and so with the media at our disposal in our day, we were taken to the Kremlin. We watched the pageantry. We saw the awesome setting and Red Square. We watched as Russia grieved its leader. And there was some pageantry. There was the auspicious environment. But I can remember thinking at that time, how do you really adequately celebrate death if the state is all there is, if there is no level beyond society, if it is to live and serve the state and die and nothing more, then how do you adequately grieve? What do you do? To whom do you turn? It's like one would be locked in, like there's a brick wall and no place to go, no one, no counterpart with whom to commune and enter in with our grief. If the Russian leadership had dipped into the treasures of the Russian people, its treasures of literature and art and music, then if it had used those treasures, those literary treasures that have come out of the creativity of the Russian soul, would themselves have been a sign of transcendence. But to be able to think no higher than the party and the state and society, to live and to die, and that's all. Short circuits somehow or other what I think is a deep human need to worship in the face of human tragedy and the mystery that we cannot fathom. As a nation, in the face of tragedy, we worship. The psalmist knew that all the pomp and circumstance of the state was as nothing when compared to the presence of the eternal God. The Lord brings the plans of nations to nothing. He frustrates the counsel of the peoples. A king is not saved by a great army, nor a warrior delivered by great strength. A nation is not delivered by strategic air defense or a space program or the finest of military hardware. The state is not saved by anything that society tends to put its stock in. Rather, the Lord's eyes are turned toward those who fear Him, toward those who hope in His unfailing love. Let Thy unfailing love, O Lord, rest upon us. We have put our hope in Thee. Not in missiles or space programs or space probes. As fascinating, as brilliant, as magnificent as all human achievement is, finally, in a moment, and a nation stunned. And what does one do but worship? Turning to Him in the face of that for which we have no word. Paul knew the wonder of that rift in the sky that gave him insight beyond human possibility. And he understood as well as he struggled with whatever it was that he struggled with that was full of pain and agony for him, that it was that very struggle with that very real human physical thorn or scar or wound that continued to remind him that he was flesh and bone and a child of this earth. And although his soul had soared into the depths of heaven, he was still very much human, all too human. And he had to learn, as long as he was human, that in the midst of his pain and his suffering, Jesus' grace was all he needed. My grace is all you need. And the apostle was able to say what cannot be lightly said. Much rather, therefore, will I exalt in my weakness, that I might know His power. For when I am weak, then I am strong. As a nation, we have known our triumph. We have celebrated many victories. We are proud, and rightfully so, of every genuine human achievement. But I like my nation best, not in the wake of its triumphs, but in the wake of its tragedies. I like what I sense best, not when we shoot the moon, but when we come face to face with the fragility of our humanity and lift our eyes to Him. He who, under the symbol of bread and wine, has never allowed us to stray far in the Christian church from the broken body and the shed blood by which His love was made known. The God who took that tragedy and transformed it into the brightness of Easter Sunday, who invites us to come in all of our vulnerability and our weakness to find His strength when we are weak, then we are strong. And then in our weakness, we will go on with our Good Shepherd. Thanks be to God.